The America that we are living in right now is not a free America. Welcome back to part two of our podcast introducing Mario Williams to the Not Free America radio program. Mario, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's exciting to have you. And it's exciting to have you because, folks, what we have here is you're not just me pontificating about these issues, which I know you love to hear, but also counsel, a licensed attorney who is not just a licensed attorney, but who argues civil rights cases all the time. I mean, let's face it. This is what we're talking about here. Why does Not Free America radio exist? It exists to bring you information and support. Our toll-free number is 1-855-925-2833. You can call that number if you have a legal problem, if you need help. You can file a legal referral, and that will go to Mario's firm, okay? Mario is here to talk with us about the issues of the day, specifically as it relates to the civil rights crisis happening in these United States right now. And I'd like to start today, Mario, by talking about what I like to call mask politics. And this is something that didn't exist before the coronavirus. There's so many things that just didn't exist before the coronavirus. But now, you know, we've got this this odd sort of presidential election that almost feels like it's happening in the background of reality. I mean, this is so weird. And maybe this is what normal people feel like every 4 years. I'm a political animal. So every 4 years, I'm focused on the presidential election. This feels weird to me, right? Like there should be conventions happening. You know what I mean? Right. Like this feels very, very weird. But at the end of the day, you have a president who is a renowned germaphobe.
Right.
I mean, probably germaphobe in chief. We've never had a president more scared of germs and viruses. He's written about this.
That's
I'm
right.
not criticizing him. And yet he won't wear a mask because he doesn't want to look weak.
Right.
But then Joe Biden is taking pictures, selfies of himself alone with a mask, which makes no freaking sense whatsoever. And then he says that he's going to use an executive order to force Americans to wear masks. Now, help me understand what presidential power affords the president of the United States. Mario, please help me with this. What presidential power gives the president the authority to say, I've got to put something over my face? Could you help me with this, please?
Well, this is what I'm going to say.
I know you and I sometimes disagree on some of these things.
Right. But this is what I'm going to say.
Talk to me.
It's unfortunate that politics has taken a hold during this COVID situation to a degree where people are literally saying they're not going to vote for someone or a presidential candidate because they don't wear or do wear a mask.
Right, and it's on both sides. This is such a stupid thing to be focused on. And it's stupid to never wear a mask. And it's stupid to always. I mean, why have we lost our freaking minds? This used to be a sane country, Mario.
It was, you know.
Like 4 months ago.
That's
I mean, we weren't totally sane 4 months ago, but we were a heck of a lot better off than this, or at least we felt like we were.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, here's the deal. Trump saying, hey, look, I'm not going to wear a mask. I want to give the feeling that it's safe to be out and the economy running.
And I can kind of understand the idea. I can understand that idea.
That's right.
It might be reckless in practice.
Yeah, Biden saying, hey, look, I'm driven by science and the COVID and the virus is spreading and I want to take precaution because it's not about me. And, you know, it's really about protecting others because I think I'm going to survive it, even though he's in the age range and with probably a lot of conditions that make him subject to.
Well, a recent ad I saw from Donald Trump makes some real serious questions into his medical health.
But here's the truth. Here's one truth of this. Both sides know that elections are won and lost sometimes on how well the economy's doing.
That's right.
And that's where people are getting played.
Well, let's talk about that because the Fed announced today that banks in the United States were reaching their minimum capital requirements. They sounded an alarm, and then they required banks to stop paying dividends and other things. This is a very big deal. It's a bigger reaction in some ways than the 2008 financial crisis. Not in all ways, because obviously we had TARP, but the sound of the alarm from the Fed today is clear. And what they're saying is that the banks are running out of money. That's what they're saying, that the bank's capital is too low. If we have to start closing down states again and we continue to shut down the economy, is it possible that the banking system collapses? In other words, is there a chance that there's a run on the banks? And if there is, what happens? We all know that if the bank shuts down and you can't get your money, it's a pretty scary thing.
It's very scary.
No one wants to think about these things, Mario. No one wants to think about it, but you and I both know. So I'll tell you something. Mario and I have had an experience just in the last couple weeks with a number of cases involving individuals who are stuck in hospitals that can't get out, that are being held against their will by the hospital.
And won't allow the family members to visit.
And won't allow the family members to visit or participate in the care.
Decisions, yep.
In one case, the hospital sedated the woman and then refused to allow the family there. I guess what I'm saying is, when you start thinking about executive orders to wear masks, where my mind goes with that is, what's the next step? If you can tell me that I have to put something on my face in order to go outside, which, by the way, doesn't really protect me, and if I don't get near anyone, then I'm not exposing anyone. If I stay 6 feet away from anyone, I still have to wear a mask by federal order. What are the penalties? How do you punish people? But the bigger question is, where does it go from there? We already know hospitals are holding people against their will. People are dying without ability to see their families. This is a crisis.
Yes.
And we want to give that kind of power to the president of the United States. Can't you imagine that might be abused?
Absolutely.
Because you can't sue the cop that screws you up afterwards. Cause of course, he's got qualified immunity. So that's nice.
You know, real quick, Mike, just think about the position that we're in. You know, as soon as we, you know, I'm a person who pays attention. I say, okay, I want to talk about hospitalizations, death rates. And as soon as you start focusing on that, just like a lot of American people do, someone says, oh, well, they're fudging the numbers.
That's right.
And then you say, well, everybody has common sense, or as one good friend of mine says, natural sense. And you say, hey, okay, well, obviously there's more detections because we're testing more. And then you hear politicians say, hey, don't test as much.
That's right.
So what are the purposes of this? And it's all to manipulate the public.
Well, it's a really good point. And it comes home because I had a situation a couple of days ago, you know, sort of a personal situation, but I had a food poisoning incident. And I was out of town in the nation's capital, and I felt like I needed to go to get seen, you know, that kind of situation. And it was very early in the morning, like 1 o'clock, and I went to a hospital in Springfield, Virginia, which is in Fairfax County. It's in the DC metro area within the Beltway. And I went to that hospital, and because I was having stomach, you know, I looked like I was coughing. Anybody that coughs, they put in a COVID room.
Oh, wow.
And so they brought me
gone.
Oh, no. Once I realized where they were taking me, I stopped. So I went into a hallway, and there are three large rooms, and they had like garage doors that came down, metal garage doors with padlocks on them.
That's scary.
It was the scariest thing. And so I said, what in the world is that? She said, these are our COVID rooms. I said, I don't have COVID, right? I have food poisoning. Very different. Right. I know what I ate. I can remember. I know what it is. She's like, no. Anytime we have anybody coughing, we put them in here. And so I'm not going in there. And so I refused. And you know what she said to me? She said, there's no COVID in those rooms. That's just where we put people who had COVID. And I'm like, well, wait a second. And then obviously there was COVID in the room, right? But this is the kicker. And the reason I mention it, she said, there've only been a couple people here since the pandemic. This is Northern Virginia. This is Washington, D.C. This was an area that was very hard hit. I'm sorry. This is an area that the governor of Virginia extended the lockdown on. And I happen to go into a hospital for food poisoning and get put in a situation where a nurse tells me they've only had a couple of patients with coronavirus. I thought that the hospitals were full. And so I understand why people, look, this disease is real. It's clear. We know that.
Right.
But the government doesn't do people any favors by using this crisis to get more power and control. Because when people see him do it, they stop believing, don't you think?
And think about this, Mike. You went in there as a sophisticated business owner of multiple projects, somebody who's been from, you know, any measures, very successful, whether it's non-monetary or monetary measures. So you had the wherewithal to say, hey, man, you're not taking me in that COVID room.
That's right.
Imagine the people who come in there.
Oh, no, you're right.
And
oh,
they don't really understand what's going on. They're going to the COVID room.
Oh, that's exactly
regardless
right.
Regardless of what they say.
Oh, let me explain something to you. I told the charge nurse, I said, I fund a law firm that has sued hospitals for doing this very thing. You put me in that room, and I'm calling my lawyer, who happens to be in town. Okay, so we're going to get this straight. No, I mean, I was, because and I think that I've said this to listeners, and if you hear anything I say on this podcast, just listen to me. If you go to a hospital in the United States of America right now, you don't have the rights you think you do. And Mario, as my witness, you've sat with me. Here's the thing, guys. You put a loved one in a hospital. That loved one is taken, locked away, sedated by the hospital. Now, you got your loved one in there, hooked up to a ventilator, God knows what, because they won't tell you.
And then you're prohibited.
You're prohibited. You're going to, what are you going to do? You're going to go in and get your loved one, and they're going to die? You have no choice. The hospital has sedated that person. That person is laid out. You can't take them. You have no choice. That is reality in the United States. And people need to know it.
It is.
Because there are people every day that go to the hospital thinking life is normal. It isn't.
That's right.
And your liberties. And that's the name of the show, Not Free America, is important. Because people, and look, America hasn't been free for a long time. We know that. The concept of liberty was based on principles in the Constitution that we were warned were going to be very hard to keep. Benjamin Franklin told us that we had a republic that was worth keeping if we could keep it. And the difficulty in keeping it is a testament to how difficult it is to actually respect individual rights. Because you know what you have to do when you respect individual rights, Mario? You have to be okay with things you don't like. You have to be okay with things you don't like. So if I want my rights respected, then I have to respect the rights of people who disagree with me, right?
I'll tell you a good barometer for that. Let's say for the African-American community, let's take the Confederate statutes.
Please, yes, great idea.
So, you know, me personally, tear down all the Confederate statues. When they're on public grounds funded by the government.
Right.
And let's take that same Confederate statue and put it in somebody's backyard on their private property.
Right. Or a museum, some kind of funded thing, privately funded thing. You could do that.
There becomes the test of the Constitution as far as are a group of people going to be permitted to go into private property and tear down something that we all believe, or at least I believe, and maybe the group of people who want to tear it down believe is offensive, but are you going to be stopped by the Constitution and the respect for property and people's ability to express themselves on their own property?
You know, it's an interesting question, and it takes the question almost further than it almost takes it further than it needs to go, because I think that as Americans, we should be horrified at the idea in general. I think that when I think about civil liberties and to just bring it down to a very base level, when I think about the promises that were made to us, you know, the idea that you have to be willing to exist or coexist with people that disagree with you, that you have to be willing to share ideas with people who are sharing ideas that make you uncomfortable in order to achieve a community where individuals are respected. If all individuals are respected, then no one's going to truly be happy, because everybody's going to have to deal with everybody else. But that's why it's hard to keep it. But it's worth keeping, because if we can build a community like that, then you know what? who's going to take care of me and my family better than me? Who's going to take care of you and your family better than you? And if our individual rights are protected, then we have the ability to do that. And the government can't take those rights away. Then we can truly be free. Doesn't mean we're guaranteed anything except opportunity. And that opportunity exists for me as much as it does for you, as much as it does for our listener, as much as it does for the President of the United States. Isn't that the idea? It's a promise of opportunity.
That's right, Mike. So I think we talked about this a little bit once before as far as human rights and entitlements.
Right.
Me and you were discussing it, and we were on the same page that a lot of times what confuses people is you hear that word right.
Mm-hmm.
I have a right to this. I have a human right to property. I have a human right to housing, water. And then the word right is, in most people's minds, synonymous with entitlement. And then we have people just diverge instantly.
That's right. You're
not entitled to that. Oh, I think I do have a right to that. And people are getting a little fuzzy and hazy on what really is the issue, which is real access, opportunity.
Right.
Affirmative action really is the opportunity, a real opportunity to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue becomes, what does a real opportunity mean to me in rural Georgia versus what a real opportunity means to me in the city, inner city of Atlanta? And who is going to help craft that meaning for me as a citizen who votes for elected officials?
So what is the answer to that, Mario? I mean, I know what my thought process is. You know, my thought process is that, again, the individual is always going to care more about themselves than the government will care about them, right? It's always the case. I mean, you know, as caring as the government can be, it's never going to care about you more than you do, right? So if we vest the responsibility and the onus on individuals, then the reality is that some people will fail, and that is an unfortunate thing, and we build a safety net to help keep people from falling, right? There's nothing that says we can't or shouldn't do that. But that's not necessarily a right. A safety net isn't a right. For example, in response to the COVID pandemic, we passed the CARES Act, and we passed the PPP, and a lot of people that work in the United States kept their jobs and kept their salaries because of the PPP. It was a great idea. I think it was a good idea. It was executed pretty poorly, but I think it was a good idea. But it's not a right. The people didn't have a right to that. That's a safety net. It's not bad, but it's not guaranteed. But do you agree with that?
This is the example I would use too. I like that. I like that example. But let's just say that I'm in the inner city and the high crime area, a lot of poverty. But somehow elected officials and benevolent people gave a lot of resources to the school that's in my district. So my resources are equal to the resources of someone living up in an upper middle class or a wealthy neighborhood. Here's the deal, though. The upper middle class person who gets up out of bed, they get a ride to school in a Mercedes-Benz and get dropped off, no hassles. The inner city kid who's going to the school with the same resource still has to walk the block, dodge bullets, crime, everything else. Now, there are going to be that, but the opportunity once you get to school is there.
Mm-hmm.
The education level, the teachers, everything else. Some people are going to be able to persevere that and still take advantage of that opportunity, but the unfortunate reality is some people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be okay with that on some level because you have to understand that everybody is not going to succeed in the same way.
That's right. I think that, you know, and it's interesting because as a business owner, 70% of my employees are minority. I think I walk the talk of my talk, you know, because I'm a pretty progressive guy in the sense that I believe in equal opportunity and I believe in effective safety nets when they're possible. I think that, you know, there's always a limit. There's a limit to what we can't do, right? Because eventually the country can't continue to pay people, for example, forever because we'd go bankrupt, right? So there's a limit to what we can do. But I think as a society of people with morals and ethics, that there's a responsibility to do a safety net to help catch people who fall. But you're right. It's either guaranteed perfection for everybody, or life as a function just doesn't work out that way.
That's right, because for an analogy we were talking about, for the child that has to get up and dodge the bullets and go through the hectic, for them, somebody up here could say, well, but look, man, you have the school system.
Mm-hmm.
But for that person's parents say, okay, that's a good start, but I need a little bit extra because I want that safe walk to school too.
That's right. Well, you know, it's funny. And you and I have talked about this, but, you know, I am a person who had a lot of white privilege growing up, even though I was a really poor kid growing up in a, you know, one-room schoolhouse apartment. It didn't feel very privileged. Where I realized what my privilege was, though, was when I went to jail. You know, when I was 19 and I went to jail and I understood, you know, how hopeless it is for a lot of people.
Oh.
And there is a hopelessness there. But I think that that's where we can, you know, I think that we can truly inspire investments in areas of our country that need investments.
That's right.
And we just don't do that.
Creating real access.
That's right.
Creating real access leads to real opportunity. But just like with the kid that wants to safe walk home, it might require something different and something more.
When I went through what I did, so, you know, I got out of jail and was a convicted felon. And I've accomplished a lot in my life in spite of that, and a lot because of it, quite frankly. But, you know, honestly, when I think about how hard that was, there's a part of me that appreciates it, Mario. Sometimes I think that, you know, the things that, what are diamonds? What does a diamond go through? You know, if you think about the things that we value so much, they're oftentimes things we accomplish through great pain, right? And sometimes that whole process can be valuable. I'm speaking from my own personal experience, not anybody else's. But I know that if the governor of Virginia offered me a pardon today, I'd say no. Because that's who I am. That experience helped me understand what I love about this country and what I absolutely want to change about it, what's right and what's wrong, the promises and the lies. I mean, I understood it real.
That's right.
It was hard. It sucked. It was real. It's nothing compared to what black and brown people who I were incarcerated went through, because they didn't, it was harder for them when they came out. But at the end of the day, when you go through adversity, you can either choose to let it define you and cripple you, or you can choose to find a way to overcome it. And I think that what we really need to focus on is how we as community can come together to lift people up. Because I just don't see evidence that the government does a good job of this. I mean, let's face it, on the left, which I've always thought of myself as a leftist, but on the left you have people who are saying, we need the government to do this and this and this and this. And stop killing me, government. Stop killing unarmed African-American people, government. But we need you to do this and this and this. But stop doing this and this and this. Excuse me. The government, maybe we just have to accept that the government doesn't work. Maybe it's just not a good nanny. Maybe it's just not a good babysitter. Maybe it's just, it's a function of its existence. We're capitalists here. Capitalism is exciting and also kind of dirty, and the government of the United States, and we're capitalists. So at the end of the day, if the government is a business, and you can't tell me that the police state isn't a business, and if the government is a business, then you're not served by that. The government is now in business for itself, not for you. Because we have to remember, Mario, we're a government of, by, and for us.
The people.
Does that feel like it's real today to you? Does this government feel like it's you?
Yeah, you have to. The government has to serve the people.
Right.
And that's absolutely the ultimate goal, the ultimate purpose of our Constitution. And then the issue is just, how do you serve the people? And it's not by lying. It's not by dividing. It's not by divide and conquer. It's not by lying. It's not by cooking the books on COVID statistics. It's about getting right down to the brass and tacks of saying, hey, look, we are going to shape access and opportunity in various ways so you can then turn around and mix your own ingenuity, your own creativity with that access to achieve whatever it is you set out to achieve or not achieve.
That's right. That's right. Hey, real quick, two quick questions from listeners. One real quick question was, it deals with the Ruby Ridge situation. Of course, Randy Weaver was a man who was had the ATF and FBI come to his property. They had killed his wife and child. This listener wants to know why the ATF agent who killed Randy Weaver's wife and son wasn't arrested for murder.
For the exact reasons that we discussed in part one of this show.
So qualified immunity. He doesn't have to. He's got all the things. He doesn't have to answer for his actions. He's automatically considered to be justified unless there's some reason otherwise.
I would say both qualified immunity and also the political reality that the USAG are law enforcement officials who, to be quite honest with you, don't do thorough investigations and are looking more. Look, when someone does an investigation, it's just like if you were investigating whether which child of yours did something and you have one bad kid, notorious, and one good kid. You kind of go in with a slant. You know what I mean? You go in with,
right.
And if you go into an investigation with a slant towards somebody, you tend to look for evidence to exculpate or to say, hey, I don't think this person did this.
Well, I've got one more viewer question and a listener question, and I'm going to ask this, but I think this is going to set us up for our next podcast. Okay, so the question is, I called the police to report my neighbor who was threatening me. And the cop told me that he couldn't get involved. Can I sue the cop for not arresting my neighbor? No, let me take a stab at this, Mario, and say, hell no, because you have no rights and the police have no duty to protect you.
That's correct.
And on the next podcast, Mario
correct.
And I are going to talk to you about why the police extensively in case law, folks, this government does not have to protect you. These costume gangsters don't have to protect
you. Zero duty to
protect. The police doesn't. Yeah, they do not have to protect you. I and Mario, we do have to go, though, because we are out of time, folks. We will be back tomorrow with our regular podcast. Thank you so much. We'll be talking about these and other issues. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you. Take care.